TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Ray McGovern, Russiagate, The Absence of Evidence, Part 1. The material for this program literally landed on my doorstep with a personal challenge. Would TUC Radio and you, who have listened over time, be open to hearing arguments that there is no evidence that Russia interfered in the 2016 elections? Given the speaker, former CIA analyst Ray McGovern, who I met and recorded before, beginning with the opposition to the war in Iraq, and given the expertise of the group around him, the veteran intelligence professionals for sanity, and given that this group expressed their doubts about Russian interference already in December of 2016, and given that no major TV or print media have given them a voice, I picked up the challenge and am giving Ray McGovern and his colleagues this space and time, and hope that you might find his arguments and evidence as intriguing as I did. Ray McGovern served as a CIA analyst for 27 years, from the administration of John F. Kennedy to that of George H.W. Bush. His duties included sharing national intelligence estimates and preparing the president's daily brief to Ronald Reagan's security advisors from 1981 to 1985. In January 2003, McGovern co-created Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPS, to expose how intelligence was being falsified to justify war on Iraq. VIPS remains active to this day. McGovern was recorded on August 4, 2018 at the Common Good Cafe in Seattle, Washington, thanks to KODX LPFM Radio for the recording. Here's Ray McGovern.
Someone came up just 15 minutes ago and said, you know, this is a really strange time. It's very disorienting. I've never seen times like this in Washington, and I've been in Washington, D.C. 55 years. She said, well, now, what are you talking about? I said, about Russiagate. And she said, oh, wow, those Russians. And I said, well, actually, what I'm going to say is that there really is not very good evidence of Russian meddling. She paled and looked and said, oh, God, what are those Trump people? I'll just add what my wife always asked me to say. My appraisal of President Trump is that he's the very worst president the United States ever had. That there are X number of reasons to indict him or to impeach him or get rid of him, not the least of which is the fact that Rita and I have 9 grandchildren who will probably not have clean air and clean water at their disposal when they get to be my age. How more serious can it be than that? I mean, what do you need to have before you impeach? You don't need made-up stuff, okay? You don't need made-up stuff. So let me just start and try to reconstruct how we got to where we are now. During the campaign in 2016, you'll remember that Hillary Clinton was accusing Donald Trump of being soft on Russia. Huh? He had this bizarre notion that it would be a good idea to have a decent relationship with Russia. Oh, God. Talk about crazy, huh? Well, Hillary and her people thought that this was something that would really resonate with the American people. Russia is bad. They would really make heyday by saying, look, Trump is soft on Russia. So they started doing that almost immediately. And then it hit the fan, literally speaking. June 12th, 2016, Julian Assange of WikiLeaks announces, we have emails related to Hillary Clinton, and we're just about to publish them. Whoa. Emails related to Hillary Clinton. This is the 12th of June. Oh, my God, the Democratic convention is just 6 weeks away. Oh, my God, I wonder what they have. and we think that the DNC knew what had been stolen. They would have the emails showing, and this is no joke, folks, showing that Hillary Clinton stole the nomination from Bernie Sanders, pure and simple. Stacked the primary, stacked all kinds of stuff, all right? So, you know, before I forget to say it, and I hope nobody take offense, if we have someone to blame for Donald Trump, you know, I mean, that's a pretty big onus, right, for Donald Trump. The Russians are, you know, easy to blame. The person responsible for us having Donald Trump is someone named Hillary Rodham Clinton. Now, she could not have lost the election because few people trusted her, or Wall Street was in her camp, or that she used an unclassified server for top secret information, or that she didn't campaign in the right states, you know. It couldn't have been that. It had to be something else. It was the Russians. Now, let me tell you how we got there. And let me just first say that this is so extraordinary. Now, everyone expected Hillary to win, right? Everyone. Well, not everybody. A couple people were smart enough to realize that this wasn't a done deal. But everyone I talked to, and, you know, Julian Assange, whom I talked to 3 days before the election, said, you know, the Germans say it's eine Wahl zwischen Pest und Cholera. Anybody know German? Okay. It's a choice between plague and cholera. And it was for me. That's why I was just delighted to be able to vote for Jill Stein, okay? So what I'm saying here is that most people expected Hillary to win. The New York Times said she was a shoo-in, and everyone was operating out of that environment, including James Comey, John Brennan of the CIA, the NSA, and the Department of Justice, Loretta Lynch, and all those folks. Very high-level people, okay? Now, how do I know that? Well, you can reason to that by being an analyst, okay? But now I have documentary evidence in the form of James Comey saying, we were operating in an environment where we expected Hillary to win. Now, if you don't understand that, it's really hard for you to believe that our very top law enforcement officials and the Department of Justice, as well as the FBI, played fast and loose with the law to make sure Hillary would win and that Trump would lose. And the documentation is out there. You don't see it in the New York Times, but I'll expose you to some of it, okay? So if you don't realize that these people fully expected to keep their jobs, no small thing, fully expected to be rewarded rather than indicted by playing fast and loose with the law, then you don't understand how this thing, kind of thing could happen. And I've not seen the like of it since Watergate, and I was around for Watergate as well. So that by way of preface to what we're going to say here. So, June 12th, Assange announces that he has emails related to Hillary Clinton, was his words, and he said that he's going to publish them soon. 2 days later, CrowdStrike, the computer entity hired by the Clinton campaign, announces, we have seen an intrusion into the Democratic National Committee, and there are telltale signs in Cyrillic. Cyrillic, as most of you know, is Russian, right? Okay. As a matter of fact, we have the name of the first head of the Soviet secret police, his name and patronymic, Felix Ermundovich, which is for Dzerzhinsky, the first thing. So whoever intruded into the DNC was either incredibly sloppy, and no one has accused the GRU, the Russian military intelligence service, of being sloppy, or they were overly clever in leaving more than just telltale signs in Cyrillic, not leaving just a tablet or a Microsoft-type format, but leaving, so we wouldn't miss it, the name and patronymic Felix Simonovich. So that's June 14th, 2 days after Julian Assange announces he's got these emails. January 15th, out of the ashes arises an entity, a persona, named Guccifer 2.0. Whoa. Who is Guccifer 2.0? We don't know. A year and 1 month ago, we asked the president to find out. Maybe he should ask the FBI. Who is this Guccifer 2.0 persona? We still don't know who Guccifer is, but we do know that he's a fraud. Now, how do we know that? Our Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity group is blessed with all kinds of expertise, including two former technical directors of the National Security Agency, Bill Binney and Ed Loomis. And they know that Guccifer is an entity that is fabricated. They know because they have some forensics that come out of metadata. And we can prove it. We have hard copy of the intrusions. And Bill Binney has taken me through, so even a liberal arts guy like me can understand. So what does that mean? Well, that means that these indictments of the 12 GRU people, GRU, the military intelligence arm of the Russians, well, they're all based on Guccifer 2.0. Hello? What does that mean? It means that, as my Russian teacher would say, it means that you cannot be sure of these conclusions. It means that Bob Mueller enjoys a reputation of being universally respected. That is, if you read the New York Times or the Washington Post. Now, Colleen Rowley, who worked in the FBI during his tenure, and worked when James Comey was in the Department of Justice, tells us all that, you know, Bob Mueller falsified the intelligence before Iraq, didn't say no to the torture, approved the wiretapping, you know, that famous scene in the hospital. Well, the next day they approved the program, they just changed the name, okay? I had a personal encounter with Bob Mueller. I was at Georgetown University with 300 other people, and John Brennan introduced his old friend, Bob Mueller, who had just retired from the FBI, and Mueller made some comments. Any questions? So I raised my hand. Okay, I do that, you know. So I said, "Now, Mr. Mueller, as a lawyer, do you have any legal qualms with the process whereby you take sensitive information? It's called parallel construction." And for the benefit of the people there, I said, that means that you take illegally acquired information from NSA, you give it to the cops, and you say, look, go to this corner next Saturday night, this time, and you get these guys, you prosecute them, and you put them in jail. You don't tell the judge, you don't tell the defense attorney where you got the information originally, and so you're perjury is involved at every stage of this, and I was just wondering, Mr. Mueller, do you have any legal qualms about that? You know, there's a lot of murmuring. Was my all intelligence friends there? So Mueller looks at me. He's a big guy. He looks at Mr. McGovern. He said, after 9/11, we were given special authorities. Next question. There you go, folks. After 9/11, we were given special authorities. You know, you've heard endless times, you know, after 9/11, maybe you could complete the sentence. After 9/11, everything changed, right? And so this Constitution, you know, that I swore to support and defend, it was sort of overtaken by 9/11. My God! And he was the head of the FBI at the time, okay? So that's Mueller. Now, how did he get appointed? Well, you probably remember that when James Comey decided he would leak a personal conversation with the president. Now, in my day, a personal conversation with the president was ipso facto classified. I mean, hello, that's a no-brainer. But he thought, well, he could make it unclassified. He gave it to a lawyer friend. They leaked it to the New York Times. And the story was that President Trump tried to get Comey to go easy on General Flynn. So, New York Times publishes that. Now, they asked James Comey, you know, it's a little irregular for FBI heads, present or former, to leak information. Why did you do that? And he said, oh, I wanted a special prosecutor named. And sure enough, the next day, a special prosecutor was named. His name was Bob Mueller. And James Comey said, thank you, Jesus, my best friend forever, Bob Mueller. Oh, man, this is going to be great. Hello. That's how it happened, folks. Don't believe me. Believe what James Comey said. Now, with respect to Comey, while we're on the subject, when it was claimed that the Russians hacked into the DNC, into the Democratic National Committee, do you remember what John McCain said? Act of war. It's an act of war. The Russians have done an act of war. What did James Comey do, the head of the FBI? Anybody know? I was like the tar baby in Uncle Remus. You didn't say nothing. Didn't do nothing. Now, if you were the head of the FBI and you heard that the Russians had hacked into the DNC computers, what was the first thing you would do? Yeah, right. Seize the computers. Take a look at them. Send your forensic experts in there to seize the computers and find out what, you know, how did this all happen? But for some reason or other, Comey didn't do that. And when he was asked softball questions by the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is a softball, the archetype of a softball outfit. Now, Mr. Comey, tell me, you didn't have access to the computers of the DNC. Why was that? Oh, we were never given access. We were never given. Well, hello. What do you need? All you need is a little warrant or a little letter. You know, the FBI doesn't hesitate from invading the homes of some of my NSA friends or anything. So he said we weren't given access. Next question. Now, Mr. Comey. Is it general practice not to seize the computers in such a case, like when people are saying there's a war? Well, no. I have to admit that best practices would mean that we had physical access to the computers, but we decided to rely on CrowdStrike, which was a super top-rate cyber organization. And they did forensics, and we borrowed their forensics. Anybody know about CrowdStrike? Run by a bunch of Russian-hating groups, hired by Hillary Clinton, and with a very spotty record, actually a disastrous record of veracity in their conclusions in the past. So for some reason or other, James Comey didn't do that. Well, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Let me be a little bit more orderly here. So we have June 12th, Assange says he's got the emails. Now, July 25th, when the DNC convention was. Now, just imagine the situation at the DNC. Hillary sitting there with a bunch of her advisors, and they're saying, oh my God, Assange has got DNC emails or my emails. Oh, and we haven't even had our convention yet. What is Bernie going to say? What is Bernie going to say when he finds out what we did? My God, what are we going to do? And somebody says, I know what we do. We'll blame the Russians. Everybody's like, come on, it was the Russians. It was WikiLeaks. That's okay. We get a twofer here. We hate WikiLeaks as much as the Russians. We'll say that the Russians hacked and they gave the information to WikiLeaks. Anybody got any better ideas? Okay, we'll go with it. And that was it, folks. That's what they did starting after June 15th, all the way up to when, 3 days before the convention, Julian Assange released the emails. Now, what happened? What was the headline in New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, when it became clear that these hacked emails had been published by WikiLeaks? Headlines were, why did Russia do this? Why are the Russians doing this? Why are the Nobody looked at the content of the emails. It was a magnificent diversion of attention. You look at the record. Nobody looked at what the email said. It was all about, why did the Russians do this? So it worked like a charm. And I had a chance to hear Jennifer Palmieri, who was Hillary Clinton's PR person, and she was bragging about going to the convention and going around in a golf cart to the various cable and other news outlets and pushing this line under instruction that the Russians hacked. She said, and I have it there, it's on tape, C-SPAN has it. She said, you know, it was hard for me to believe the Russians would hack to help defeat Hillary Clinton, help Trump win, but we tried to sell it. And it was hard for anyone to believe, but when we got back to Brooklyn was Clinton headquarters, right? Then intelligence people started coming to us and filling in the blanks as to how the Russians hacked. And then we had journalists who had been briefed by intelligence people, and they told us more. And then, best of all, the Obama administration would start to confirm these stories. So then we were off and running with this story. Now, it was so bad. John Brennan, the head of the CIA, was leaking like a sieve to the New York Times and elsewhere. It was so bad that the Wall Street Journal complained. They're not talking to us. They only talk to the Washington Post. They only talk to the New York Times. They're neglecting us. That's the Wall Street Journal saying. So that's what was going on then, okay? So the story was out, and it was clear in everybody's mind. Okay. Then there's the election. What was it, the 8th of November? And then a curious thing happened. Now, we all watch Rachel Maddow, of course, right? No, okay. Well, she had Chuck Schumer as a special guest on the 3rd of January. And they were talking about Trump and how he was bad-mouthing the intelligence community. Can you imagine? Bad-mouthing his own intelligence community? And so Chuck Schumer said, you know, I thought that Trump was a pretty smart businessman, and he knew, you know, what fights to pick, but he's done something very, very stupid. And Rachel says, oh, what would that be, Chuck? And he says, well, he says he's taken on the intelligence community. And they have 6 ways to Sunday to get back at you. Very foolish thing to do. Now, Rachel, if she was a real interviewer, she would have said, Senator, are you saying that the President of the United States or the President-elect should be afraid of the intelligence community? And that's, of course, exactly what he was saying. And I'm sorry to tell you that's true, because that is the reality. Trump's own freedom of flexibility, his freedom to do things he wants, is tightly circumscribed by the intelligence community. And that is the Donnybrook that's in process right now. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a few minutes. Anyhow, that was Chuck Schumer on the 3rd of January. Now, on the 5th of January, President Obama, in his last few weeks in office, this is 17 now, 2017, he was briefed by NSA, CIA, and the FBI that had done this very poor excuse for an intelligence assessment, adducing no real evidence, but saying that Putin himself had ordered the hacking of the DNC. Now, he was briefed on that. Now, what's really interesting is that this document that everybody crows about, this intelligence community assessment, the only accurate word in those 3 words is assessment. Was it the intelligence community? No. Was it just 3 agencies of the intelligence community? No. What was it? It was hand-picked analysts from these 3 agencies, not the agencies themselves, hand-picked analysts. Who picked them? Who picked them? James Comey, for God's sake. Now, Everyone knows in Washington that if you handpick the analysts, you handpick the conclusions, right? Okay. So there you had this document out that everyone is still crowing about. How can Trump stand next to Putin and not believe U.S. intelligence? You know, this is terrible, you know. Oh, U.S. intelligence is always correct, except for before Iraq, and except for a couple other things, all right? So this is necessary because on the 18th, so we're talking about the 5th of January, 2017, Obama's briefed on all this, okay? Now, on the 18th, Obama gets up for his last press conference. And having read this and been briefed on this assessment that Putin himself directed that the DNC be hacked and the results be given to WikiLeaks, what does Obama say? He says, and I quote, "The conclusions of the intelligence community with respect to how Russian hacking got to WikiLeaks are inconclusive." Period, end quote. Inconclusive conclusions. Wow. So why does Obama say that 2 days before he's going out of office? Because he's a lawyer. He wants to protect his derriere, you know? The Russian hacking was bad enough, because he probably knew what the evidence was, like not much, but saying that it was given by the Russians to WikiLeaks. You know, we know, and I refer to my NSA colleagues, former NSA, two of them were technical directors at NSA. They know that it wasn't a hack because of the fact, number one, NSA collects everything. When Bill Binney, former technical director, when he told me that, he says, "Ray, trust me, I couldn't say this before, but once Ed Snowden brought those slides out into Hong Kong, not only could I say it, but I could show exactly how it's done. I could show the trace routes that are implanted in the network where they trace every single email. It's broken down into packets. The packets are reassembled. Those of you technical people realize what that means. We can trace exactly where it originated or where it ended up. And there ain't nothing. There ain't nothing on Russian hacking." So that's negative evidence, right? In other words, the argument would be, if NSA had that, certainly they would reveal that given all the controversy. But you know, Donald Rumsfeld, not my favorite philosopher, but he did go to Princeton, and he learned the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence.
You heard the first of a two-part program with Ray McGovern on debunking Russiagate. He was recorded by KODX LPFM on August 4, 2018 at the Common Good Cafe in Seattle, Washington. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelöden. Thank you for listening.